So I think college tennis is definitely going to continue to keep getting stronger, keep developing. More and more players are going to be open to it. And one of the big changes that has happened in college tennis is in 2021, something was passed that is called NIL, and that's name, image, and likeness. And basically what it is that college athletes are allowed to profit from endorsements, marketing, advertisements and such, through their name, image, and likeness. So that was a big change because athletes were able to, in a way, start getting paid through that. You can see that a lot on Instagram. It says in partnership with. That means that they got paid for that. But tennis players don't have a lot of deals, I would say, when it comes to that. Males, compared to females, have a lot more. And I know that there's many people working hard with that, trying to close that gap a bit. But I would say, like football players, of course, they, bring a lot of money to universities. They have big names and everything, so they can make millions, through NIL deals. So that's one of the big things that has changed. And there's no real cap on it. Like, there's no max amount that they can get on it. So it's changed a lot. And then obviously, also the fact that now tennis players can accept up to $10,000 a year, and have no eligibility issues. So those, I think, are all interesting changes for sure. There's people that argue for it and against it, and everyone's going to have their opinion. But I think college athletes for a long time have felt that, they do bring money into the university, and it's like having a full-time job because of the amount of hours, dedication, and all the work that you put into it. So
det här är Linus på baslinjen, en podcast om och för svensk tennis. Welcome to a brand new episode of Linus på baslinjen podcast powered by Zenis. Today we have Jessica Lehnhoff with us. Jessica is born and raised in Guatemala City. When she was 11, she moved to Florida and soon became the number one player under 14 in the States, a position she held during her junior years. She went on to compete in the slams as a junior, chose the college pathway and played for University of Florida. After those years, she reached number 166 in the world on WTA and 105 in doubles. After her career, she coached in Florida, New York, London and Sweden, and later started her company Lehnhoff Tennis International. In this episode, we talk about the idea behind her company, the decision for her to go to college instead of going pro when she was top 10 in the world as a junior, what Jessica learned during the college years, the importance of a good video when starting the college process, what she helps her clients with in the contacts with different schools, and how college tennis will look in the future. And of course, we discuss much, much more than that. Please visit lehnhofftennisinternational.com for more information. But now, Jessica Lehnhoff. So now I have the big pleasure to welcome Jessica Lehnhoff to the podcast. Welcome, Jessica.
Hello, Linus. Thanks for having me. Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you. I have been looking forward to this chat for a while, Jessica. We have a lot of things to talk about. And of course, we will talk quite a lot about college, but also a little bit other stuff about your background and your own playing career. Are you ready to go through all this in your history?
Yeah, sure.
You're born and raised in Guatemala. Tell us about your childhood and how you got into tennis, and the first steps.
Yeah, so a little background. My mom is 100% Swedish. She grew up in Sandviken. My dad is Guatemalan with some German, you know, background as well. So he was studying in Germany at the time. He got an internship in Sweden, met my mom. That's how that came about. Then they moved to Guatemala and then had four kids in Guatemala. My childhood in Guatemala was a beautiful childhood. First of all, the country is spectacular. So much nature, the people could not be warmer, just beauty all around, you know? And I was privileged to grow up with three older brothers. And I followed everything they did, you know? So, you know, they did karate, I did karate, swimming, baseball, every sport you can imagine, you know? There's old videos of me with like their baseball cleats on that were this much bigger than my own foot, like taped to my foot, because I just wanted to be like them, you know? So we did every sport. And I think that's kind of how, you know, my athleticism started kind of building just through so many sports and just being active all the time. Then we started belonging to this club, is the German club, with, you know, a lot of people from Germany are in Guatemala, actually. So it's this club or social club. You get together, you can take part in many sports and you eat there. And well, we got dropped off there all day long, you know, by my parents. Like after school, we got dropped off there. We had like a gang of kids that we all just hung out all day, every day, you know, and so we just played sports all day long. And then, of course, after school, you know, when we had school and everything. And then this guy came up to us, and I vividly like remember this happening. We were sitting outside with the family. He came up to us with a wooden racket with the screws, you know. It's like, I haven't seen you kids, you know, try this sport yet, you know. And we were just busy doing everything else. And so he gave us this racket. So for a few years, my brothers and I shared this racket. Like I had to fight them in order to use this racket, you know, and we started just against the wall. And even like my first lesson and lessons after that were against the wall. There were these two squares. I had to hit the ball into the squares and, you know, worked a little bit on technique and things like that. But, you know, I started with maybe like half an hour lesson once a week, you know. And then just my brothers and I would play and nothing serious, you know, but that's how we kind of got a taste for tennis. You know, that's how the story began for our family. You know?
Wow. Okay. And since then you have loved tennis, or have it been up and down, like with your interest in the sport?
Yeah, I think at the beginning, you know, I liked so many sports. So it was like I didn't want to play tennis all the time, you know, at the beginning. You know, I wanted to swim and do many things. I swam for my school, for example, and, you know, played quite a bit of soccer and things like that. So it wasn't like I was this obsessed tennis player. But when I hit against the wall, I would be out there for hours, you know, like I really, really enjoyed that. But it didn't make me just do that, you know. And I would say, you know, once I started competing and everything like that, it's like every tennis player, right? You're traveling, you're competing so much, putting everything out there, that you have moments, of course, where it gets a little bit, you know, like it's a lot, you know. And that's when I made sure to take a little bit of time, you know, and then come back. There were some times where I took like a month off and then I came back again. In juniors, even, you know, when I was like top 10 ITF, there were times where I needed that, you know. So, but it wasn't often, of course, as you know, tennis, you can't take a lot of time off or anything like that, you know. But I've loved the game since the beginning, for sure, you know. And I think competing is the main thing that I became pretty much obsessed with, you know. So.
Okay. Do you know how the tennis is in Guatemala today?
Yeah, I don't follow the tennis in Guatemala that closely, but I have seen, for example, some solid players come out of there. I saw that there was a girl ranked in the 30s, ITF juniors. She actually just ended up going to college right now. There was another one, 100 ITF. She went to college also. I know we had a guy like 300 ATP as well. So far, I think juniors and in the pros so far, I think I've been kind of like the highest rank to come out of there. But we've had some good players following for sure, you know.
So. Okay. Okay, that's cool. But for you, when you were 11, from what I understand, your family moved to the States and to Florida, and you became number one in the under 14 in the States. How was your setup looking like then? Did you work with the federation or privately, or how did it work in the USA?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I mean, when we moved to the U.S., my dad got a job offer in America, in the U.S., so that's why we left Guatemala and moved here, and we moved to Florida. And at that time, you know, I think I was ranked number one in Guatemala under 14s as a 10-year-old, you know. So I had started competing. I had played one international tournament in Honduras, which I loved. You know, my thing was like, meeting players from other countries. I got a little taste of that as an 8-year-old. Yeah. And I'm a very social person, you know, so just kind of getting those experiences of traveling somewhere new and meeting different people. I love that, you know? So, but then when we moved to the US, again, it was like, you know, I was still following my brothers and everything like that. And I would say that even though I was number one in Guatemala, I wasn't taking tennis so seriously, you know, like we didn't move here and say, oh, Jess is going to have like the best training and this and that. Like I could have just been like, you know what? I don't really want to play tennis anymore. It wouldn't have been a big deal. My parents did not push me at all. I would say that I pushed them to like, hey, let's get going. Like, you know, yeah. I want to train more and things like that. So I think it's the opposite of many cases, you know, that you see. So, you know, I'm very, very lucky in that way, you know. And I think when Jannik Sinner recently stated that, you know, that about parents and everything, it resonated with me because I felt the same as him, you know, just okay. Being very lucky to not have that push all the time or pressure, you know. But then, like, at the beginning, we only had a green card, so I wasn't allowed to play nationals or anything in the U.S., uh-huh. Right? So when you're not allowed to do something, what happens? You want that even more, right? Like, that's a story of life itself, right? Yeah. Like, I'm not allowed. Okay, this is the thing I want the most, right? So yeah. That's kind of how it happened with me. So I would play all these local tournaments during the weekend. And, yes, I was playing, you know, most of the time I was playing people weaker than me level-wise. But that helped me, you know, parents are always like, you got to play somebody better. I can tell you that looking back at that time, it helped to develop my game. You know, I could try different things in the matches. I was able to kind of test a bit, you know, how I wanted to play and things like that. And I think my game developed, you know, a lot from that. And then eventually we got our residency in here, like in Florida, like in the US, and all of a sudden I was allowed to play nationals, right? So I have a funny story because my first round match in the national tournament was against a friend of mine who was my roommate in the tennis academy later, and she was stating that when she saw the draw, she thought it was the best draw she could imagine. She was like, oh, I got this girl from Guatemala, you know, I've never heard of this person. This is great, whatever, you know. Yeah, and I come in there with like fire coming out of my head because I haven't been able to play these tournaments and I want to do well and everything. So my first national tournament, you know, I end up winning, you know, singles. And that's kind of when things started changing a bit. You know, I got like the Reebok sponsorship. You know, I started getting some things here and there that definitely helped my family out. You know, having four kids, very, you know, strenuous, like financially, you know, for parents. So that brought along some opportunities. After winning that first nationals, I won national indoors. Then I won national clay courts, national hard courts. I won the Eddie Hearn, the Orange Bowl. So I won that year as a 14-year-old. I won every single tournament. Wow.
That's amazing.
So it's funny looking back, you know, and kind of what motivated me so much. And I think it was just all those years, you know, again, of competing in the lower level and then finally having this chance to compete higher and taking it, you know. But up to that point, you know, it's not like I was training in a tennis academy. you know, 5 hours a day. It wasn't like that, you know. I don't think I was even training every day, to be honest.
But was it like raw talent then, or what was it that made it?
Which is a curse as well, you know. It really is. I mean, it's the talent took me far, you know, and then it was kind of like, okay, the talent only takes me this far. Like, I gotta get going here, you know. There's an awakening that happens for sure, and I would say it happened. I mean, maybe under 16s, 18. I mean, I continued the trend. I mean, I was number one in 14, 16s, and 18s in the U.S. You know, won the Orange Bowl under 16s doubles, got to the semis in singles. Then, you know, so you know, top 10 ITF. So the trend continued, but I would say that I wasn't dominating, like winning every single tournament like I did under 14s. You know. But it's funny, looking back, because I didn't have these crazy parents. I just loved it. I love to compete. And when you saw me, like when I watch old videos and stuff like that, rarely, it's like VHS, can barely see yourself playing. You know, I just see the joy, you know, of competing and how much fun I'm having out there, you know.
But if the fuel for you was to have fun and to compete and so on, but when you have that kind of success in 14, 16s, and 18s, I guess it becomes quite more serious during that time. Like everybody wants a piece of it. Like coaches want to come with their advices. It's a lot of opinions, talk about going pro and so on. How did you handle that?
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, after I won Eddie Hearn Orange Bowl, I think a lot of things came, you know, and my parents, in a way, didn't know how to handle that either. You know, my parents were not tennis players. This was all new to them. You know, they had no idea, like, the potential that I had, really. They were just clueless in a nice way of saying that, you know. And so, yeah, we had, like, an agency come. They took them out to lunch, you know, wanted to sign me. But they were not ready for that, you know. They did not want me to have that load on me at 14 years old, you know. They wanted me to have a regular childhood, you know. So I would say up to that point, again, I was, you know, if I didn't want to play tennis one day because I wanted to hang out with my friends, it was no problem at all, you know. So, that's.
Yeah, I see.
I don't know if I answered your question, but
absolutely. You were ranked top 10 in the world as a junior, but you choose to go to college instead of going pro. Why did you choose that decision?
Yeah, I mean, it was at the time, you know, I had a lot of voices coming from all sides, you know. The USTA had, you know, helped me to just, you know, financially to travel to Europe and play some of those tournaments and things like that. But I would say I did not have a huge part in the USTA development, I would say. I would take part in the USTA camps and things like that, but it wasn't like I was like a regular USTA player, you know. But yeah, when I was top 10 ITF, I mean, It was definitely a tough decision. At that time, I had already been in a top 100 WTA player, you know, at 17 years old. So I think level-wise, a lot of people thought that if I kept developing, it's something that I could have maybe handled and done okay, you know. But looking back, I mean, I just think that being a professional athlete is a long-term plan, you know. It's long term. I mean, we're talking years and years and years. You know, how are you prepared to handle that? You know, do you have a strong team around you? You know, do you have the financial support to do it? You know, so many things that come with being a professional athlete that it's not just, is my level ready? You know, so I think at that time with my parents, we sat down and we just thought, you know, 4 years of continuing development, you know, in a place such as University of Florida, where you go there, like if you want to turn pro afterwards, you know, it was only going to benefit me. You know, I was going to mature as a person. I was going to develop physically as well. If you look also, I mean, the physical aspect, right? Can your body handle that amount, you know, of playing, traveling, all of that life, you know, and also the loneliness, you know, of being a tennis player out there, you know. Looking back, I'm like, do we have the financial support to have a coach travel with me full time? I would say no. You know, that's incredibly expensive. So I think we chose so smartly, you know, and I look back and I'm like, oh, thank you. Thank you for having chosen the college pathway. I think if you ask me now today, would you choose, you know, playing 4 years of college or, you know, going back and playing the Grand Slams like you did, I would choose college 4 years. Yeah, that's the truth.
Do you think if a couple of different players ranked top 10 in the world in juniors today would ask you for advice, would you give the same advice to all of them, or is it individual what suits them best? That some
individual,
might.
Individual. Sorry, didn't mean to cut you off. Individual for sure. Everybody has a different setup, you know. I think financially, that's a big deal also, you know. We all know being a tennis player is incredibly expensive, you know.
Yes.
So I think it's very like on an individual case basis. I just saw Ben Shelton now this weekend. And, you know, him, he was, what, 300 and something as a junior player? You know, I don't even think he competed in the Grand Slams, if I'm not wrong. I don't think he even played in the Grand Slams, you know. As a 300 and something ranked ITF player, I don't even think that you can get in. But you know, look at him, you know, and the progress that he's made and everything like that. And so I think you know, he the same way, he wanted to continue to develop, and look how fast he has developed in the right environment, you know. But I would say I can't advise people on my own experience, because that was my own experience, you know, and I think some people are ready, you know, perhaps. But I just think that it's not harmful, you know, to give yourself a little bit more time. You know, if you continue to do things right, use the resources that are given to you, work hard, you know, stay motivated, all of those things, I think college tennis can serve an incredible what do you say? Like purpose in your journey, you know.
And I mean, after the years at college, you turned pro. What more specific did you bring from the college years onto the tour? In what way have you grown during those years?
I think it's a level of maturity, to be honest. You know, learning time management, for example, also. Again, being a tennis player, you manage everything, right, in your life, traveling to different places, meeting new people. There's so much that you have to handle. It's not just being on the court and putting on your best performance. There's a lot more that goes into it, you know. So I think in college tennis, I learned just so much about myself and just having the constant support. You know, I had a sports psychologist, you know, I had a nutritionist, the best fitness trainers. I would say, you know, I'm biased, but I had the best coaching. Like my head coach and assistant coach at University of Florida were unreal. And just everything that I learned from that experience, obviously I took onto the tour. I would say, and also just the amount of matches that we played, you know, and also where the coach can sit on the court. I think for me, that served a big, like, purpose for me, and it was a big advantage. Just really kind of learning more about handling certain situations and so forth. And so I think that whole format of college tennis helped me, you know, handle the pressures and everything going on the pro tour. I mean, I rose quickly on the tour, you know. It didn't take too long to, you know, to go up, you know. I think it was like a year and a half, and then I was already playing qualies at the Grand Slams, you know. So it was quickly, but I think a reason for that is because of all the matches that we played, you know.
I see.
It's an incredible quantity, you know.
And you went to the University of Florida, which is a great school. Do you think you would have got the same the same load of great experience with you if you were going to another school that maybe is not one of the top ones? If you,
it's so hard to say, but you know, I've known many players that have done extremely well that didn't go to these, you know, at the end of the day is what works best for you. You know, you look at Eric Butorac, for example. He became, you know, top ranked in doubles. He actually went from a Division One and transferred to a Division Three. And guess what? That Division Three school worked better for him. And all of a sudden, his confidence was up. He was the leader on the team. All of this, I read this super interesting article on him. And that helped him tremendously. So again, there's no like perfect path for anyone, you know, just because your level is like, you know, you're able to play D1 level, right? It doesn't mean that that's the right path for you. And that's kind of like, you know, with LTI right now, that's what I try to help kids, you know, guide them as to like making the best choice that is going to fit them the best, you know, after having a lot of conversations with them, getting to know them and things like that. So I think it's just so many different options that you have, and just doing the research and being educated on the options, I would say, you know.
And how did you experience the differences between the college and the pro tour? For example, like in college, you're a part of a team. On the pro tour, you're traveling by yourself more. You cannot be coached during the matches and so on. How do you see that, those differences?
Oh, man, it was a rude awakening. I was like, where is my team? Where is my coach? Why are my racks not strong? They're just sitting there broken. Like, you know, where's my, like, we were spoiled, okay, for 4 years. Like, it was, your racket broke, next day it's strong. I mean, it's like we have magic elves, like, working all around us, like, making us be, like, you know, the best athletes we can be. I mean, it's unbelievable, you know? So it was definitely a hard transition, you know? You know, the tour is very lonely. I would say, you know, personally, it did not fit me the best, to be honest. You know, okay. I did not love the pro tour. And I think if I would have loved the pro tour, I would have continued longer, to be honest. But I enjoy college tennis a lot more, I would say, you know, just I'm a people person, having, you know, working for the same goals and celebrating together. And there's just no better feeling, you know. So needless to say, of course, I enjoy playing, you know, the Grand Slams and things like that. They were great experiences. But I would say to be in that environment for like 15, 20 years, I mean, I just couldn't envision that for myself, you know. So
because it was not fun enough, or?
I think it's just a lonely life, needless, you know, it's a lonely life. Like if I had my team around me, like that I could travel with and you know, you have different people with different situations. Okay, I'll use Ben Shelton again. He's traveling with his dad, you know, to every tournament. That's already a big support there, you know. I traveled by myself. I didn't see anybody just be completely on their own in the Grand Slams. I didn't have anybody with me, you know. So I was 100% alone. I traveled alone. I had no coach, no family, nothing. I just dealt with those things alone. And I think financially, you know, my freshman year of college, I lost my dad. You know, he passed away my freshman year of college. So also going back to your question about did you make the right decision, you know, looking back to that hard time in my life, University of Florida helped me tremendously. You know, I had excellent therapists there to handle that shock as such a young person, you know, 19, losing your father, and then having my team rally around me and just be such a strong source of support, my coaches. I mean, it was just, I felt really lucky to be in that environment. And I think going through such a hard thing, especially because my dad was I was very close with my dad. He was a big kind of inspiration for me with tennis and everything like that. So I think that loss was huge, you know, and could I have handled that the same way if I would have been out on the tour? You know, I look back and I'm like, I was just so lucky to be where I was, you know. And so again, you know, my mom was by herself. Now, when I was on the tour, the financial aspect, you know, my dad was the breadwinner, right? So he brought in the money, everything like that. So now, you know, I didn't have two parents that, you know, could provide thing, you know, could provide enough to maintain me out on tour and such, you know. So so it was a little different situation in that way, you know. I think finances was a big part to not being able to take a team with you, or even just a coach, right? Somebody to accompany you that is not going to make life so lonely out there, you know.
You reached 166 in singles and 105 in doubles as best. Do you think you maximized your career and your, I mean, chances or
if you ask people,
potential?
If you ask people, they'll say no, you know. But it's my story, you know. And I was happy to end when I did. I've had an incredible life. Honestly, like, I've been so lucky, you know, and I had two torn ligaments, you know, so I tried to, you know, in the wrist, in my right wrist, I'm a righty, you know, so that took a big toll, obviously. And I think, again, it goes back to, like, you know, trying to put the food on the table, you know. You sometimes you don't listen to your body, because tennis, you know, it's so strenuous. You got to go out there, and you can't take this week off, and you got to keep going. And that's sometimes when the body takes a toll, you know. But I think in doubles especially, I could have been a lot higher, you know. That is how I feel. But I'm happy regardless, you know. It's like, I don't sit here every day. I'm like, why did I do this? You know, it's like,
I understand.
I had a lot of time to make the decision, and I just, it was good. Yeah. It was the right time, you know. It was good.
Perfect. And moving on to after your career, or your playing career, Jessica, you have coached in many different places, Florida, New York, London, here in Sweden, where I am now. What differences have you experienced through coaching in different countries and in different cultures?
Yeah, that's a good question. Looking back, I mean, just through my experience, I'm not going to say that this is the general thing. I found England to be pretty, like, bureaucratic in many ways as far as coaching goes. I think Sweden for sure was my absolute favorite, you know, coaching.
Really?
Yeah. I got there and, you know, I was able to be myself from the start, in the sense of, like, you know, they didn't, you have to coach this way. And this is the, you know, that's how England was, you know. And so in Sweden, it's like first day, it's like, you know, how do you feel about having this, you know, top group of boys, you know, and then eventually, like, you know, you're going to have the ATP group, you know, three players that you're going to be in charge with, and you're going to, you know, be the head coach of the elite series for all these. And it's like, you know, these opportunities, being a woman also, right? It shows how advanced Sweden is in terms of that, you know, compared to others. Because I can tell you that I would say the other places are lagging behind that, to be honest with you, you know. Even the boys that I had, I was blessed to have amazing kids in Sweden that, I mean, I started with them, I believe, when they were 13. I had like five of them, and then I coached them all the way till they left for college tennis. When they left for college tennis, they left through my company. So it was bittersweet.
Wow.
And when they left, I actually left with them, Sweden. Honestly, I didn't even envision starting with another group. I had these boys for 5 years, and I'm like, they're leaving. I'm going to leave with them.
Okay.
And I was trying to head back to the U.S., be with my family and all of that. But I would say, like, having these boys every day and traveling with them, and it was just an absolute pleasure, you know. And they never, you know, I coach Milo Sekulic, you know, from soccer. And, you know, we're very good friends now. We talk often and everything. And he never questioned, like, you know, what is this woman? Like, you know, it's like, who cares? Like, the gender thing never came into the conversation or anything, you know? So I think I really appreciated that, you know, in Sweden, and just kind of entrusting me with these very, very good players. It was just, I look back and I do miss that. Yeah. So.
Okay. Yeah. Miloš is doing great work now as a coach.
Yeah. Follow him, and he sends me players and things like that. So, we're collaborating, and he does sometimes the hitting, you know, in the videos and things like that. So,
okay.
You know, his brother played college tennis and everything, so he knows the system and things like that. So yeah.
Did you coach college tennis yourself?
No. I have not. I have had some opportunities to do so. You know, once I started with LTI, Lenov Tennis International now has been going for over 10 years. I cannot believe how time flies. But obviously it's a conflict of interest, right? If I'm going to be college coaching, because we're moving to Minnesota, and I just had one sort of offer come to the table. But as far as being an assistant coach, starting with that college coaching, but it's not allowed, you know. I would have to let go of LTI, which I am not planning on doing. I love doing what I'm doing. So, yeah.
So we can get into that. Tell us about the idea behind the Lenov Tennis International. How did you come up with the idea from the start?
Well, when I moved to Sweden, I mean, I had no plans to start any sort of company. You know, I was coaching and I was enjoying that, but, you know, hearing the kids that I was working with talk about, you know, their path, and, you know, just I realized that they didn't know a lot, you know, about college tennis and what a great pathway it can be. And also, you know, once they, you know, a little bit of time passed, just not knowing anything about the process and how to get started and how it works and all of these things. And I had also talked to some players that had regretted their choices of not giving college tennis a try. And so I had, you know, all of these examples like before me, and I was like, I have to do something, you know, I have to do something. Like, I need to just try to help them, to just educate them on the choices that they have, you know, and then they make the best choice for them. Again, you know, it's like, everybody's life is different. You make the best choice that fits you, you know? But I think it's important to know what the choices are, you know? And I think at that time, you know, 10 years ago, think about it, Linus, like how many players from Sweden were playing college tennis? Not a ton, you know? It's grown a lot.
Yeah, definitely. But when you say when you say there's different choices, what choices do you mean? Like locations or different schools or
Oh, I mean for colleges, I mean it's so many options. Different divisions: Division One, Division Two, Division Three, NAIA. You got the junior colleges. You know, there's really a level for almost anyone. You know, and so I think college tennis is an option for so many different people, you know, people that want to play pro afterwards, people that want to go back to Sweden and get a master's, people that just want to use it for like an experience, you know, being in a team environment, playing tennis and just living abroad. There's so many different options as far as, you know, and Division Twos, a lot of Division Twos beat Division Ones. Division threes can beat Division twos, can beat, you know, the number behind the division does not mean that the level is the highest. You see what I'm saying? So of course you have the really big, you know, universities that are Division ones that dominate in many ways, you know, but there's just thousands upon thousands of schools. So there's just so many options, you know, but I think also just, you know, learning the options of like, okay, I can go to the pro tour and this is what I have, and then, or I can head to college. This gives me a little bit more time to develop mentally, to develop physically. You know, look at tennis. I mean, what a physical game it is. Yeah, it has become. I mean, so it's just giving you that extra time to build on your body and such, you know, like, again, I'll mention Ben Shelton again. How many pounds has he put on? He's put on a ton of pounds, you know, since he left college tennis. you know, just with time, you know, college tennis, he kept working on it, left college tennis, and now he's, because he's older, you know, now he's 21, so he's able to keep developing. But as a 17, 18 year old, you know, it's tough to get there, you know, so giving yourself a little bit more time, I think, can be very beneficial as well.
How do you know how to advise the players that are looking for help from you? Is it through, like, you ask them a lot of questions, and then you find out what they probably need the best? Or how do you do when you're guiding them?
It's a combination, you know. It's getting to know what their academics look like, you know. I look at their UTRs, look at their results. You know, a lot of times the UTR is not 100% accurate. You also have to look at the results. You know, what levels are they competing with? You know, even though they might be losing to certain levels, but they're still competing, you know, close to this level. And then you speaking with them and kind of getting to know what their interests are, you know, what some things are that they're looking for, if they know what they want to major in. In the US, you can be actually undecided for the first 2 years. So you don't have to pick what you want to study in the first 2 years. Okay. When I went to college, I mean, I had no idea what I wanted to study, like no idea. So I wanted to study tennis, basically, right? and then I had to pick something else on the side. So, you know, I took 2 years of a lot of courses and kind of got to know myself a little bit more. Again, right, giving yourself a little extra time, get to know yourself. And then by my third year, you know, I went into TV and film production. And so that's kind of what I was set. Like, I was like, I spent these 2 years learning about all these different things. This is what I enjoy. And that's what I picked, you know? So I think that's an advantage as well. So it's an overall profile, you know, that I look at, and then I try to find the best fit. And then it's like, you know, are academics more important for you, you know? Or are academics and tennis equal? You know, is tennis a lot more important? You see what I mean? So now it's like I have in my head, I have like all of these schools that I'm like, this kid could fit this school and this school. And of course, you also have to take budget into consideration, right? So a lot of times just in life, right, money can get you through the doors that normally it can't, right? So a lot of times, like if you are, let's say a very good student and you have a very good budget, but the UTR is a little bit lower, you know, a little bit more money can give you a push through the door. And then once you kind of prove yourself, you have the ability to get more scholarship, you know, tennis wise.
I know it's maybe a tough question to answer, but how good do you need to be to get a scholarship today? As a girl or boy?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very tough question, I would say, honestly, because there are so many levels of schools, you know. But I would say, you know, in women's sports, in women's tennis specifically, it's easier with scholarships than men's, you know. So, for example, in a fully funded D1 women's, you're going to have 8 full scholarships. In the men's, you're going to have 4.5, right? So in the men, let's say you have 10 guys, that 4.5 scholarships has to be split between the 10.
Okay.
And then in the women's, it's like 8 get the full, and then you can have like 1 or 2 walk-ons. Walk-ons mean that they pay, you know, like the school, you know, they're just there, still part of the team. And there's been some great walk-ons, you know, that have made the team and have had great careers. So there's absolutely nothing wrong with being a walk-on, you know. So there's just different ways of getting in there, you know. Okay. And I try to help them find the best way possible, you know, like what's going to maximize your chances, you know, to get to the best school possible for you, you know.
Okay. And I guess it if you're not really, if you don't know a lot about the college structure and how it works, it can be tough to find out all these things on your own. And that's why you offer, or you have your company, I guess.
I mean, the first time my first boy I helped was Johan Jonhagen, like quality guy, right? He's like, I'm two summers ago, I went to, I spent the summer in Sweden, and we, you know, with the boys that had gone to college under me, went to dinner and got to hear all their stories, and it was just beautiful. Like, I actually started crying at dinner because I was like, so emotional, these boys that I coached for so many years, and hearing how college tennis impacted them and all of that. But anyways, like Johan Jonhegen, he was the first boy I helped. And I was, I didn't have a company or anything. I was just helping him to help him. Like, I didn't even think of starting a company at that time. But I regretted it after that, man. I'm like, this is so much work. And I told him, Johan, this is crazy. Like, oh my gosh. So after I helped him, you know, a lot of players started coming up to me asking for help. And I'm like, I have to set up something. I cannot do this for every kid, right? Yeah. So that's kind of how LTI was born. I was like, I have to, you know, create a legit business, you know, and try to do this. You know, I started really small, four kids maybe, you know, and because I was coaching, right, almost full time as well. And these were, you know, kids that I had known and things like that. So I started with them. And then I just, it kept growing, you know, little by little. Now it's grown into, this is the only thing I do. I actually don't do coaching. I'm full time with this job. And it's only me. I only help Scandinavians. So if an American kid was to come up to me, I only help Scandinavians, you know,
and why?
And only tennis players as well. Because I wanna like that. I know the Scandinavian system, first of all, right? Like the schooling, all of that stuff. Like, obviously I've been to school in America and everything like that. So that wouldn't be an issue, but I don't want to start taking kids from like every nationality and things like that. I feel also like with just Scandinavians, it just feels small. It feels like a cozy kind of company, you know, like a family, you know? And I keep my numbers small enough where every kid gets the same amount of attention, you know, and that's very important to me. You know, if I ever feel like I'm not able to handle this number, I'm going to have to switch it up, you know, but it has not been like that. I get the kids all in different times, you know, for each year. So some kids are happy with their UTR, for example, so they want to make the video before the summer, let's say. Once that happens, they start talking to the coaches right away. Other kids are like, I want to compete the whole summer, you know, and then they make the video after summer. Some of the kids don't make the video till now. You know, I just had a girl for fall 2024 make the video now, you know. So they're all in different times, you know, but when they join LTI, we start with some administrative things. So that by the time that they're speaking with coaches and such, they're not overwhelmed with like, I have to do a million things at once. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. But
getting this done and that done and, you know, this, and then you get, because if I gave them everything at once, they'll be like, okay, no, like this is not happening. It will be just overwhelming, you know? So I try to take it step by step, and kind of like the earlier they come to me, it's like, you know, the more relaxed they're going to be able to go along the way, you know, because they just in time, they're getting the tests done and getting the scores they need and such, you know. So.
But from when you started the company, it has definitely grown. Do you still feel you have exactly the same connection with all the players today as in the beginning? Because there are more now.
I honestly do. I mean, because think about it, I do this full time now, you know. So I'm on my WhatsApp.
You're quick to reply. Oh,
my family, they're about to throw my phone into the ocean, okay? Because I can tell you that. It's WhatsApp, ding, ding, ding. You know, this is, you know, I'm full time with this, and I can tell you that. 100%, 100%, and I wouldn't have it any other way, you know. Going with me, I mean, I would say that LTI, every step I try, you know, my best to give them peace of mind that they're doing everything accordingly, you know, and in a timely manner. And in 10 plus years, you know, LTI has 100% success in sending every single person that has ever joined LTI. You know, there has never been eligibility issues. There has never been like, this level is not high enough. I'm only going to have kids join my company where I know 100% that I'm going to be able to sign them to a school, you know, and I'm really proud of saying that, you know, that it has 100% success. And so far, I've never had a kid leave my company to transfer to another company. This okay. year alone, I took in 3 kids from other companies, you know, so to me, that also states kind of like, okay, like I'm doing a good job. They're satisfied with what they're getting, all of that, you know, and it really works a lot through word of mouth too, recommendations, you know. Mm-hmm. I helped my first Norwegian, was it like 3 years ago? And then she told her doubles partner and she told her friend. And all of a sudden, I'm like, boom, 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 boom. Like just a ton of Norwegians. I love working with Norwegians and Swedes, of course. I've had one Danish kid and it's just great. You know, there's a level of independence in Scandinavian kids. A lot of the kids, for example, haven't felt the necessity to bring their parents, you know, into the process. They've wanted to do it themselves, keep that separate. I would say that in America, that would be extremely rare.
Yeah, different cultures.
For the parents not being involved in a college process is extremely rare, you know.
Yeah,
but I would say that in Scandinavian, and there's nothing wrong with the parents having some involvement. Absolutely not. I mean, trust me. Like, I love, you know, speaking, even getting to know the parents. We have, you know, great conversations and such. But I would say for the most part, the Scandinavian kids kind of drive their own, you know, bus towards the finish line themselves, you know, with the support of their family, of course, you know. Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay, okay. I just want to ask you, you mentioned that the players do their videos in different times during the year. Is the video really important in the process? Is that what the coaches are looking at? Or
the video is very important. Yeah. Okay. You know, unless you have a university that has a lot of money that's able to send the coach to watch players in the different countries, you know, not every university has funds like that, you know, so how are they going to gauge the level of the player? They're going to go by video, you know, so I coach them through the video, you know, how much time spent on each, you know, forehand, back, you know, how much to put in each section, what it should be like, you know, the energy, all of these things. I coach them through it all. I mean, honestly, I coach them even how to speak to coaches, for example. I mean, it's like having a job interview, you know, talking to a coach.
Yeah. You
know? So I coach them through that. That I would say that's rare for a recruiting company, but that's one thing that every single step you can imagine is like handled. Right. You know?
Okay.
So in the end, I feel like my kids are really well prepared in bringing like their best selves to the coaches, you know. Okay. So I think it's definitely an advantage.
Okay. Just because I'm not going to get stuck in it, Jessica, but about the video, how honest should the video be? Do you cut out the unforced errors or not?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I like the beginning part, you know, like the 3-4 minutes. I like it to be no editing, honestly, you know, from the middle you're hitting, you know, just don't edit, you know. And then I would also say, Linus, is that a lot of the coaches, if they're not satisfied with a video, they'll ask for unedited, you know, like, you know what, have her or him play a set without editing, you know. And then we send the coach that, you know. But I would say that plenty of times, you know, I have gone back to the players and because I checked the video and then I let them know, hey, listen, like there's too many cuts, you know.
Okay.
Let's touch on this part and whatever, you know. Let's not cut so much, you know, because it doesn't look good. Like I think sometimes The idea may sound good, like I'm gonna cut right here. Like I missed it. I'm just gonna, you know, redo this part. Like I'm like, no. Like you can really tell that you missed that shot. You know what I mean? So it's just better to do the less editing, the better, you know? Yeah.
Okay. I think me as a coach would probably like to see a full set as well. That's what I would absolutely like. Yeah.
Or even like a 10-point tiebreak too, you know? Sometimes I ask them to put that towards the end, you know? And that's fine as well.
Everyone, Jessica, have obviously their own pathway and their own journey. And I guess through all your years of experience, you have seen many players both be reach a high level early, but also be some kind of late bloomers. Or what is your experience about that?
Absolutely. I think the journey is different for everyone independently. You know, I don't think there's like a magic potion that you have to follow in order to get to be the best player that you can be, you know? So there's been so many late bloomers that have been doing extremely well. Some players that started taking tennis very seriously, for example, at 14 years old. I know like John Isner, for example, he started taking tennis seriously at a later age, you know? So I don't think that just because you have this major success in the juniors, yes, it can be a glimpse, of course, right? If you're winning Grand Slam juniors, it can be a glimpse of the potential to come. Absolutely, you know. But I don't think it's the recipe for success 100%. You know, I've had a lot of friends be top 10 ITF and they ended up quitting tennis, you know, before even continuing, you know. So I think sometimes even having like a slower rise, you know, can be advantageous in many regards, you know. There's been players that have been, there's doubles player, Austin Krajicek, for example, number one ATP doubles, you know, he was like out of the lineup in his university, you know, the following year got higher. Now he's number one ATP, you know what I mean? So just because, you know, like, I don't know. I just think it's there's a different path for everyone, you know? Going back, like I was the number one recruit as a junior, you know, to recruit for college, you know, did that signify that I was going to be the best just because of that? No, of course not. You know, it's just different for every single person. So I just want kids out there to not be discouraged. You know, if they're not killing it right now in juniors, you know, just continue developing. You know, that's the most important thing, you know. Continue developing your game, you know, and I think that that's the way that you're going to reach your highest potential, you know.
I think it's easy to get stressed and it's easy to compare yourself to others all the time. But I think we can agree, we see more and more examples of playing breaking through later on. So I guess it's all about staying calm and trust your path and your way of your journey, so to say.
Absolutely. And another thing that I wanted to touch on is like, what's the worst thing that can happen if you go to play college tennis? Let's say you're ready for the tour, but you go play college tennis for a year, let's say. You win everything. You win All-American, NCAA, all of that. You can turn pro after that. You know, it doesn't mean you have to stay in college for 4 years, right? So if you go and dominate, that means that you're pretty, you know, you pretty ready, like to handle the level of the tour, you know. But I think it can be a real good test as well, you know, giving yourself college tennis, you know, in the span of time, you know, and just going through that and seeing how you do. And in the worst case, you know, you go back to your country and keep going, or you turn pro. There's just so many options, you know, but I would say that there's nothing to lose making that option happen.
But I guess it, with what you're doing now, you build some kind of relation as well with your clients when you're guiding them through the process, and you can follow them in the States, how they're doing in the schools and enjoying life over there, I guess. And that's some satisfaction as well.
It's incredibly rewarding, really. You know, I'm following them all the time, all the time. And just, again, seeing their progress. I just did an interview on my website for people that want to see it. But, you know, with a Norwegian player, he started like number 7 on the team on a Division One school, you know, and in 1 year of being in college and giving his all and everything, now he's playing at the top of the lineup. That's an incredible improvement that obviously doesn't happen every time, right? But seeing stories like that develop and just, you know, witnessing how the college pathway is playing such a big part in a lot of these kids, you know, knowing that I have like a very small part in that, you know, it makes me so happy. Even, you know, some of the kids that I've helped, they come back to Sweden or Norway with the partners that they've met in the US, you know? And then I'm like, hey, if I wouldn't have sent you to that school, you would not have met that person, right? So I have like this little bit to do with that, and just to see them happy. And you know, many of their American partners are now living in Sweden, and to see that happen, you know.
Yeah, that's cool.
Like
that's
Ludwig, cool. Ludwig Heidren, you know.
Yeah.
His girlfriend from Montana, and now they're both living in Sweden, and just seeing how happy they are and everything. Yeah, I mean, I really get to know these kids, you know, and I'm constantly messaging with them. They message me from school. And you know, that's the one thing about my business is that my door does not shut. You know, when they get to college, they can contact me for advice, for anything, you know, so they know that they have that constant source of support, you know, and
that's great.
Again, I mean, super rewarding. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very happy to be doing what I'm doing.
And if we look forward from now, Jessica, how do you think college tennis will evolve during the next 5-10 years time, if you can
I think
make a
college
guess.
Tennis is always evolving, you know. I think the levels are getting higher and higher, to be honest with you. Look at the levels in the Grand Slams, how many college players there are taking part. It's unbelievable, you know. I just can't imagine it not continuing to grow, you know. And I think more and more people from different countries that maybe weren't so open to it are now becoming more and more open to the idea of college tennis, and seeing those college players succeeding on the tour. I mean, you look at Australian Open, Danielle Collins almost taking out Iga Swiatek, lost 4-6 in the third, you know. You look at Jennifer Brady, you know, Peyton Stearns, you look at Ben Shelton. I mean, all of this, you know, it's unbelievable how the college players are doing. And so I just think absolutely it's just going to keep developing for sure. It's going to keep growing in my opinion, you know.
It looks like that. We will end, Jessica, with three questions I ask all my guests here. And the first one is a movie or book you have been inspired by.
Movie or book? Recently I saw these, you know, the kids that got stuck in the cave in Thailand.
Yeah, yeah.
Trapped 13 or 13 trapped, whatever. That documentary was unbelievable to me because they were stuck in this cave. I think we was for like 20 something days. Stuck,
okay.
Like the water rising and everything, and it was unbelievable to kind of watch them, and it was a documentary, like, you know, documentary going back to the events and everything, and every kid had their role, you know, of how are we going to survive this cave. You know, you had the leader, you know, you had the ones that were, you know, weaker, you had the, but they all came together as a team to survive this.
Okay.
I mean,
wow.
It was unbelievable. Even just like plucking at the wall to kind of, because the leader thought that this would help them mentally to think that there's a chance to get out of here, you know?
Okay.
So you have like the leader kind of affecting the minds of the others that were losing hope and such, you know? And I think going back to life, I think having a strong team around you, you can get through anything.
Okay. I haven't seen that documentary, but okay. Where did you find that?
It's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix. Okay. Yeah. Okay. A role model or a mentor you have looked up to during the years?
My dad.
Your dad? Okay.
Yeah.
Last question, Jessica. Except for this documentary, would you like to recommend anything else?
Yeah, go with LTI, baby.
Of course.
But listen, the families, the parents, the kids, you know, feel free to contact me. Questions mm-hmm. you have, for example, you know, it's not, you can contact me just for questions also, you know, to learn more about the process and things like that. I'm happy to try to give as much information as I can, you know. It doesn't mean that they have to sign with me. I'm happy to provide information beforehand and make sure that they're wanting to make the best decision for themselves and for their kids and such, you know. So I'm happy to do that. Yeah, apart from that, I think, you know, we covered a lot today. So hopefully, you know, these people will enjoy listening to a bit of this.
It's been a lot of fun. And I will put all the contact information in the show notes to this episode. Jessica, a lot of fun talking to you. And thanks for sharing your experience and knowledge with us this time.
My pleasure. Yeah. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's really, really nice. So,
thank you.
I think that year when I was 14 years old, where I had some really solid results, I think it was a mix of definitely some talent, but also the athleticism, you know, of doing a lot of different sports and doing everything that my brothers did. So I think it was a mix of both. But, you know, after doing well that year, it was kind of like the first time that my parents and I were like, whoa, like something can come from this, you know? Maybe I should start taking this a little bit more seriously and try to keep developing and see where I can get to, you know? So that's basically where I got some opportunities after the Orange Bowl and everything to attend tennis academies. You know, I had an offer from Saddlebrook and then from a smaller academy in Tampa, Florida, which was Palmer Academy. Jared Palmer, actually, his parents ran it. And I know he spent some time in Sweden because of his wife and stuff. And it was an amazing academy, very small, and we had some of the top national players there. So I begged my parents, you know, can I please move there so I can train more, you know, and play against better players. And, you know, now it was like it was time to step up a bit. So, you know, they had a long think about it. And finally, they allowed me to do that. So I lived there and, you know, went to school there and had amazing training and kept developing. And yeah, I mean, after that, I stayed 1 year there, and then my coach moved to Delray Beach, Florida, to build another academy, so I followed him. His name was Alan Ma, and so I trained with him there out of Delray Beach, Florida. My parents were able to move close by, and all of a sudden, you know, had my family around, had really good training, went to a very good school. The whole setup was great, you know, so that set me up, you know, for getting a good opportunity to play college tennis and then try to prepare to go further than that, you know, turn pro after that and everything. So, but I think, you know, it was a big step in my development for sure, making that leap and, you know, moving away from home. And, you know, everyone's journey is different. A lot of people can have that training at home. For me, I felt like this was the best place. And yeah, I loved my time there, you know, very, very great memories. And yeah.
Of course, really fun talking to Jessica Lenoff.
And as you could hear, she was a great player on a really high level that have the experience from both the professional career as a senior, a really great junior, and a player that have got the college experience as a player and now have all the knowledge as the expert on college tennis, helping players over from the Scandinavian countries. So if you haven't already done that, please visit lenoftennisinternational.com to read more about her company and also get in touch with her if you have further questions on how she can help you fulfill your dream about the college tennis and about tennis in general. Either if you just want to head over to combine tennis and studies, or if you are aiming for a professional career but think that the college pathway is the right way for you to choose. Thanks, Jessica, for taking part in this, and a new episode are on its way very, very soon. And also, if you haven't done it yet, please visit baslinjen.com for more content about tennis in the Nordic countries.